Daniel chapter 1. We'll be looking at the standing firm for the Lord. You'll see in this young man someone who demonstrates that godliness is possible in an age of ungodliness. You think about this year, this is around 590 BC, 600 BC, maybe 606, somewhere around there, when Nebuchadnezzar came in to Jerusalem and took a lot of people captive, among them these young men. They're mentioned in Daniel chapter 1 and verse 6, and then their names that are given to them in Daniel chapter 1 and verse 7. But you'll notice how they're described in verse 4. They had no blemish. They were well-favored, skillful in all wisdom, cunning in knowledge, understanding science, and had the ability to stand in the king's palace so that they could learn the king's tongue, the Chaldean tongue. These were some bright young men. These were some guys who had potential. Now, if you find somebody like that today, we say, oh, we need to send them off to the, you know, the greatest university so that someday they're going to be a great benefit to our society. But these young men decided that the greatest thing they could ever do was serve God. The temptation was there. Taken captive, flattered, really, by those in higher places, by even saying, you know what, you guys have been chosen out of a whole bunch of other people. And so they've got some flattery here. G. Campbell Morgan talks about this man Daniel, and he's really the focus because Daniel's the leader among the group. G. Campbell Morgan said of Daniel, he was a man of purpose, prayer, perception, power. How old was Daniel and these young men, because I've called them young men, about how old were they? Some think they may have been as young as 12 years old. Anywhere from 12 to 17. So, children, this message is for you. But you adults, you're in this too. Because this is a challenge. If a young man can take a stand like this, and by the way, it's hard to find young people taking a great stand today. But if a young person can take this kind of a stand, when the pressure is the greatest, then surely you as an older person can do the same. Surely we can be challenged by the life of these four young men, Daniel in particular. We look around our country today and say, my, why is our country in such a mess? Why is everything going downhill so fast? And we blame the corrupt politicians and we blame the immoral people and we forward emails about, you know, what's going on here. And, you know, we have the funny things that we forward in emails and I like to get those. But it's not just the corrupt politicians or the immoral people who should get all the blame. I lay the blame at the feet of many Christians. Christians are responsible for many of the problems we have today. Why? Because we don't stand firm. Because we compromise a little bit when the time gets rough. We kind of step aside from what we know should be right when the pressure's on. When the fire's getting kind of hot. When the focus is on us to see what is he or she going to do. And so this fits not just young people, this fits older people. And I stress again that the reason we find our society going so quickly downhill is because of Christians who don't take a stand. What if every professing Christian in this nation would take a strong stand? Do you think that might make a difference? Well, let's just start right here then. Let's start at Westside Baptist Church. Let's start with each individual here. But even now, folks are thinking, well, that's good for somebody else. That's too much to sacrifice. Boy, you know, we enjoy so many modern comforts, and we hardly expect anything else, anything less. But right here in Daniel chapter 1, you've got the account of four young men who really have the opportunity to enjoy life's pleasures. Think of it. You've been chosen. We're going to train you. We're going to feed you. You're going to have everything best because in 3 years, we're going to take you before the king. And we're going to show you off. They're basically going to have what we would call today the American dream. But they chose not to take it for the sake of what they believed. And that's a real challenge. We left off in verse 7. I want you to go to verse 8. And from verse 8 to the end of the chapter is what I want us to be challenged with. And we're going to see in verses 8 and 9, Daniel's purpose. It says right there, but Daniel purposed in his heart. Daniel purposed in his heart. That's where it has to stand. You know, today we say, well, you know, God's grace is sufficient. I don't need, I'll just, you know, I'll go with the flow. But here's somebody who's going to purpose, I'm not going to go with the flow. Here's somebody who's saying, you know what, I'm not going to be just in the stream and letting the stream take me where it wants to go. I'm not going to let society push me the way society wants to go. Here's Daniel who purposed in his heart. We're going to see, first of all, his determination. Look at his determination in the first part of verse 8. That he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. There's his determination. He is not going to defile himself. Now his name has already been changed to something horrible. Did you ever have your name changed in high school? Where people called you what you looked like, or maybe due to some inability you have, or maybe some ability you do have. You ever been called names? Here's Daniel, and Daniel is given this name, Belteshazzar. If you go to chapter 4 and verse 8 sometime, you're going to see that it means that they changed it according to the name of my God. That's what the Babylonians were doing. According to the name of my God. And Belteshazzar means Bel's prince. He's already got something negative going. They're calling him names. But not just Daniel, but Hananiah. By the way, we know them as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Folks, those are the Babylonian names. You need to memorize the Hebrew names as well. Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. But Hananiah, look at his name. His name, by the way, Daniel's name means God is my judge. They changed it to Bel's prince. Hananiah means beloved of the Lord. They changed it to Shadrach. Rach was the name of a sun god. And now his name means illumined by the sun god. Mishael. When his mother gave him his name, when his parents gave him his name, it means who is as God. Changed to Meshach, a false god, which means who is as Venus. Azariah, the fourth young man, his name in Hebrew means the Lord is my help. His name is changed to Abednego, the servant of Nego, a false god. So right away, in order to influence these four young men, they change their names. And they say, your name is no longer Daniel, Shadrach, or Daniel, Mishael, Azariah. And Mishael, Hananiah, it's now Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Behind the change of names is a satanic attempt to wipe out the memory of Jerusalem and have these young men give up their separation and become assimilated by the Gentiles. Folks, you need to make up your mind that you can't help what people call you, but you can help what people demand of you. And even after they had changed his name, the Bible says, but Daniel purposed in his heart. Because they can't change his heart. They can change his name, but they cannot change his heart. And that's where you need to have it, is in your heart. Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Daniel purposed in his heart. That's where it starts for young people. That's where it starts for older people, to purpose in your heart. Let me put it this way. I was challenged by one of my teachers in college to make up your mind ahead of time. Make up your mind what you're going to do and what you're not going to do. And he would scream it. This is a professor who would take his shoes off, jump on the desk, and wiggle his toes out there for everybody, Dr. Walter Fremont, and say, "How beautiful are the feet of those who proclaim the gospel." He never forgot this guy. And he's the one who said, "Make up your minds," and he would scream it, about what you're going to do and what you're not going to do. Make up your mind. And don't deviate from it. You see, if you make up your mind ahead of time, then when the time comes, when the emotions are strong, when the pressure is great, the decision's already been made. I appreciated that because when I was 12 years old, we went to a camp down south close to Colorado Springs. We loved to come out to Colorado for our family reunions. And there I was challenged as a 12-year-old to make up my mind that I would never, ever partake of alcohol. Never. And I made up my mind. And by God's grace, I still haven't done it. By God's grace, I shall continue never to ever drink it. I can't say I never touched it. I've told you that story. Maybe some of you haven't heard that story. I went to a Rockies game. And my wife and I, we were in the nosebleed section where we're all, you know, the cheap tickets. And this is where all the drinkers are. And so I put my arm around my wife, and I felt something cold. I looked, and I put my fingers in the beer of the guy behind me. So I can't say I never touched it. I did touch it once. And I put my hand, I almost licked it. And I thought, oh no, I'm not going to lick it. And the guy saw me, and he says, "Oh, anything to get a free beer, huh, buddy?" So I have touched it, but I've never partaken of it. By the way, I don't know how you can. That stuff smells wretched. You know what? I can't help what people call me, but I can help what people demand of me. Purpose in your heart. Daniel stood in spite of his circumstances. Here's a man who had conviction. Conviction is something that you know needs to be done because the Bible demands it of you. And I will never change. I will give my life because it is a conviction. Now, that's different than preference. We may have a preference. But conviction is something I will die for. Preference is something I may give up because I simply may be wrong. Or, you know what? I might be able to compromise when it comes to preference. But not for convictions. Daniel purposed in his heart. His determination was he would not defile himself. Make up your mind ahead of time. You have a big point of pressure coming up this week? Pray through it. Talk to some people, some believers. Make your decision ahead of time. And then when the time comes where you have to stand before Him, your decision's already made, see? And then you stick with it. You purpose in your heart. How could a young man do that in the face of the Babylonian authorities? Same way you can. Young people, determine not to defile your bodies. Determine where you will go, where you will not go. Make up your mind. By the way, Daniel's determination to do right prepared him for a later test. Who was thrown into the lion's den? Who went into the lion's den in spite of the pressure? Yeah, because as a young man, he'd already determined, you know what? I've purposed in my heart, I'm going to serve God no matter what the consequences are. Those who can't stand in the smallest of trials won't stand in the greatest of them. Could you one day take a stand for the Lord and, you know, even if it meant martyrdom? Not if you can't stand to be laughed at today. Daniel's determination. Secondly, we see under Daniel's purpose his directness. Look at the last part of verse 8. He was pretty direct with somebody. Therefore, he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. He didn't flounder in his indecision, in some kind of indecision. He went directly to the prince of the eunuchs. This is what I call Daniel's directness. He told him politely, but he didn't beat around the bush. You know, when we're challenged about your Christian life, when you're challenged about perhaps some standards that you hold to, what's your answer? Well, my church doesn't believe. So it's not your conviction, it's your church's. Well, my mom and dad don't want me to. So it's not your conviction, it's your mom's and dad's. You know, the greatest thing for young people is when they make sure that their convictions, you know, that these are God-given, these are God-derived convictions, and I'm doing this because this is right, and I'm not doing this because this is wrong. It's not because my church says this. It's not because my pastor says such and such. It's not because my parents don't want me to do this. It's because, you know what? That's wrong, and I'm not going to do it. I like that about Daniel. He's very direct. Hey, go out and go get a drink with us. I don't have the money. Is that what you would say? How about, no, I don't drink. I believe it's wrong. You see, that's direct. Daniel's directness. Thirdly, we see in verse 9, Daniel's dignity. Now, God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. Now, that's kind of ironic, isn't it? That this young man who's got such convictions is the one who's got favor and tender love with the head of the eunuchs, with the head of those who are trying to work with these young men. That is not coincidental. Why was he loved and favored? Because he took a stand and he was respected. Daniel's dignity. I'll tell this story again. When I was in the ninth grade in Monroe High School in Monroe, Nebraska. This is one of those old schools. It was a straight-up square building. It had one of those fire escapes, those tubes that came out of the side of the building that you would throw yourself in if there was a fire and you'd go scooting down that tube. We used to play in it. And it was in Miss Brockman's science class that we freshmen were in there one day, and Miss Brockman had to go, and she had to go to the principal's office for something, and that left the room with about 25 crazy freshmen. And we were just in there probably just chatting, but then a senior walked in, Mike Donelski. I remember his name, and you'll find out why. Mike walked into the room. And he saw that no teacher was in there. Actually, he walked by the room, looked in there, and saw everybody was kind of... I think we were probably throwing paper airplanes and shooting spit wads. I don't know. And so he looked in, saw there was no teacher, and he walked up to the teacher's desk. It was a big desk. You know, it had all the beakers, and it had the, you know, the faucets and the gas and all that kind of stuff. It was a science class. And she had all of her papers and books strewn out there as she was teaching the class. She had left it that way. And Mike Donelski walks up, fills one of those beakers with water and takes that water and pours it all over the teacher's materials. Of course, the freshman, oh, this is so cool. Wow, that's the senior. And Mike Donelski walks out. And everybody's kind of in a riotous mood now. And then the principal walks by, Ted Kramer. Ted Kramer weighed 260 pounds, was about 6'2", and was feared. Mr. Kramer walked by, saw this, and walked in. And then he looked at the desk and he saw what was happening. And he walked up to the desk. And it was dead silent now. I had seen Mr. Kramer work with freshmen before. I had seen him take my buddy Doug Zuha, grab him by the... This is when, you know, you could do this kind of stuff. He grabbed him by the neck, shoved him up the wall, and held him there and said, "You do that again, I'm going to take care..." It was that kind of a principle. And so the freshmen, we were scared. He walked up to that desk and he looked around and he said, "Who did this?" No freshman in his right mind is going to rat on a senior. Then he looked directly at me. He said, "Dan, who did this?" You see, Ted Kramer knew my dad and my mom. And he knew me. And I said, "Mike Donelski, sir." I had just sealed my death warrant. But he knew he could ask me. I don't say that in pride. I say it because I had tried to take a stand. I was a freshman. That if you know what, I'm going to be honest. Mike Donelski saw me later that day and he did to me what Ted Kramer did to my freshman buddy. He really did. He grabbed me and told me, "I'm going to kill you if you ever do something like that again." Daniel had some dignity. Because why? He had purposed in his heart he was going to serve God. And he took a stand. Well, Daniel's purpose leads to something else. It leads to taking charge. You know, you find somebody like Daniel and you're going to find somebody who's good for a leadership position. And so we see, secondly, Daniel's proposal in verses 10 to 14. Look at his dare, first of all, in his proposal. Look at verse 10. "And the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who hath appointed your meat and your drink. For why should he see your faces worse liking than the children which are of your sort? Then shall ye make me endanger my head to the king." In other words, the prince of the eunuchs is protesting what Daniel is requesting in verse 8. But here's Daniel's answer in verse 11. Here's his proposal. "Then said Daniel to Melzar, whom the prince of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah." Notice what he says. "Prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days, and let them give us pulse." Pulse is vegetables. "Let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our countenances be looked upon before thee, and the countenance of the children that eat of the portion of the king's meat. And as thou seest, deal with thy servants." In other words, you let us eat the vegetables and the water. You let the others continue on with the king's meat and the king's drink. And then at the end of 10 days, you compare us. There's Daniel's proposal, but look at his dare. "Prove thy servants." He is daring the prince of the eunuchs. Folks, you see, Daniel's purpose is not just in his heart. Daniel declares it. He makes it known. He is able to dare because he is confident. Not confident in himself. Not confident in anyone else. He is confident in his God. That God would bring him through. That's faith. That's trust. That's dependence. Folks, is your faith such that you could make this kind of a dare? Even without your companions at first following? Who's taking the lead among these four young men? Daniel is. Daniel's the kind of friend that you need to be to someone else. Daniel's the kind of friend that you need to look for. I read in Proverbs 13:20 that he that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed. This is the kind of a guy I would like to find to be a companion with. Chapter 3, you get to the chapter where there's three young men who take a stand even when it comes to being thrown into the fiery furnace. Well, wonder where they got that. They had a good friend. And they saw a good friend of theirs take a stand in chapter 1. I read in Psalm 119:63, "I am a companion of all them that fear thee, of all them that keep thy precepts." That's the kind of a companion you need to have. You say, well, I'm an adult. I'm beyond that. No, you're not. Adults, even in old age, are influenced by other adults. Choose your companions carefully. Daniel's dare was this, that living for God would in the end prove better than living for anyone else, including himself. He was convinced enough, he was convincing enough to that eunuch that he was willing to risk his neck to let Daniel do what Daniel proposed. So there's Daniel's dare with his proposal. Secondly, you're going to see under his proposal his deficiency. Look at verse 14. So he consented to them in this matter and proved them 10 days. They were deficient of the king's meat. They were deficient of the king's wine that everybody else was drinking, that everybody else was eating. No king's meat, no king's drink, but pulse, vegetables, things sown, vegetables, bread, and water. Why wouldn't he eat the portion of the meat? Because, folks, the portion of the meat that these other men were eating was dedicated to some god in a sacrifice. And sharing in the remains of that meat was in honor of the god to whom that meat was sacrificed. And Daniel would have nothing to do with that. It wasn't because he was a vegetarian. But we would say, well, providence seemed to lay this banquet right in front of me. Providence, God has allowed me to have this meat and this wonderful drink. And that's the way we would probably think today, and we would probably use it as an excuse. It's not that Daniel would not eat. That would mean starvation. He fed upon something different that looked deficient in the eyes of the world. He was deficient of what the world considered to be important. Is there anything that we are deficient of that the world considers important? When I was about from age 9 to 15, we had no television in our house. And I'd go to school and my friends would say, hey, did you watch such and such last night? I said, no. And it wasn't because we thought television was wrong. It was just that the church we attended thought it best that folks in the church, you know what, don't have a TV. And we consented, hey, we're a member of this church. We're going to live up to the standards of this church. Didn't necessarily agree with it, but oh, we'll live up to the standards of this church. By the way, some of the best years of my life were those years where we had no TV. And, you know, my friends would make fun of me because I don't know what was on TV during those years because I didn't have a TV. But they'd ask me, did you see such and such on TV? No. And they would make fun of me. And yet, on the other hand, they really respected me. We were deficient of something in their eyes. Daniel's proposal means they would be deficient in what everybody else considered to be important. Thirdly, not only do we see Daniel's purpose and Daniel's proposal, but we see Daniel's proof, verses 15 and 16. Look at Daniel's proof. Start with verse 15. And at the end of 10 days, their countenances appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the children which did eat the portion of the king's meat. Here's the first thing I want you to see about his proof. Daniel's proof is his difference. Their countenances appeared fairer and fatter in flesh. Here's what's going to happen when you take a stand for the Lord, when you even give up some things that the world thinks is important. They're going to see this in you. They're going to see a difference. And the difference will be pronounced. Every time my brother Terry returns from the mission field of Sri Lanka, he makes comments about what's happening in this country. He says, man, and he kind of blames it on Christians. He says, man, what's going on here? I can't believe you're letting take place in Washington what's happening. I can't believe you're letting take place in your state what's happening. What are you guys not doing? He just returned from Sri Lanka this last week on furlough. And I'm sure I'm going to hear it again. Man, what's going on in this country? Things are going down the tubes. You know what the answer is? Christians aren't making a difference anymore. Christians aren't taking a stand because Christians do not purpose in their hearts. There's no proof that they're Christians anymore. I read in Titus 2:14 that who gave himself for us that he might redeem us from all iniquity and purify unto himself a peculiar people zealous of good works. Folks, many times the difference that people need to see comes by giving something up, but we're too unwilling to give things up. We're too unwilling to give up our time. We're too unwilling to give up so many things to make a difference. We see his difference in verse 15. We see his dent in verse 16. Thus Melzar took away the portion of their meat and the wine that they should drink and gave them pulse. Wow, here's an impact. Daniel's stand has an impact. Why is it that Christians aren't making a dent in this world? You know, I read of a small group of men back in 1917 who had an ideology, and they took a stand with that ideology. It's an ideology I totally disagree with. It's communism. 1917. And did you know that by the time the Soviet Union fell and communism fell? By the way, communism did not fall. By the time you get to the 1990s when the Soviet Union fell, from that small group in 1917 into the 1990s, they controlled two-thirds of the world. I would say communism made a dent, wouldn't you? And I also read at times of what communists, young communists, would do. They would die for their ideology. They would sacrifice for their ideology. They would give up things, putting Christians to shame. Folks, when a Christian lives as he should, things are going to happen. There's going to be a dent being made. How? Just live the Christian life. That's the greatest contribution you can make. And so I ask you this, are you making a mark on this world, or is this world making a mark on you? Is there a difference in the way you talk? Is there a difference in the way you dress? Is there a difference in the music you listen to? Is there a difference in the places you will or will not go to? Oh, I'd have to give up too much. There's your problem. You're not willing to be deficient in the eyes of the world. Then we see lastly Daniel's position in verses 17 to 21. What was his position? You say, man, this guy went down the tank. He went down in flames. What a reject. Well, let's read about it. Look at verse 18. Daniel on display. Start with verse 17. As for these four children, God gave them knowledge and skill and all learning and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now, at the end of the days that the king had said he should bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. So here he is on display. You've probably often heard it said that you are the only Bible that someone may ever read. You're on display. You claim to be a Christian. You are on display. People are watching your life. It may be an unsaved loved one. It may be an unsaved friend. It may be another Christian who's not living for the Lord, but they're watching you. Your life is on full display. You know, some people don't like the fact that you're on display. I don't like being the focus. I don't either. But if that's what it takes, if you live a life that is totally sold out to Jesus Christ, the world's going to notice it. You're going to be on display. Didn't Jesus say, "Ye are the light of the world"? You stand out when you're a light. Oh, but there's a way to hide that light. Jesus talked about that too. But he said, Men do not take a lamp and light it and then put a bushel over it. That's what we find so many Christians doing. You're the light of the world, but boy, as soon as there's a bushel that somebody can put over that so people can't see what you are, I don't want people to know I'm a Christian here because, yeah, the bushel comes over. He's on display in verse 18. Then I want you to see his distinctness in verses 19 and 20. And the king communed with them. Here, who is he communing with? He's communing with all the young men. He's communing with all of these men who had been taken captive. By the way, it's just these four young men out of all the Jews who are taking a stand. The others gave in. And the king communed with them. And among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. No one else. There's their distinctness. Therefore stood they before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in all his realm. 10 times better. You know what should be said of you at work? Whatever your place of employment is. Man, he works harder than anybody. He works 10 times harder than anybody here. You know what? She works 10 times harder. You know what should be said at school? You know, there's a difference. That person is distinct. You work while others waste time. You study while others sleep. You pray while others play. In your life as a Christian, there's no place for loose or slovenly habits in word or thought or deed or dress. You're clean, you're courteous, you're punctual. Punctual. This is one of the things that I really see with Christians. You know what they say are going to be such and such at such and such a time, and they can't show up on time. They're different. They're distinct in their speech. They're distinct in their self-discipline. All of that, folks, takes hard work. And that's why we don't do it. But if I truly follow the Lord, if I truly am a believer who is serving God, then what I have to display in this world is what God has given me. Would you note that? I'm going back to verse 17. As for these four children, God gave them knowledge and skill and all learning and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding and all visions and dreams. Yes, it was Daniel taking his stand, but it is ultimately God who gives you what you need to take a stand. And it is God who gives you that distinctness in this world so that people see a difference in you. Purpose in your heart. Stand firm. You know what the best way is to draw a circle? If I were to draw a big circle in here, some people would say, well, let's take a piece of chalk and I'll walk it around. You know what that circle is going to look like? It's going to look oval. It's going to be all messed up. The best way to start and to draw a circle is what? Start at the center. You start at the center, and then you've got a perfect circle. Many people try to be a Christian, and they try to keep rules, and they try to, well, if I just do this and if I do that, and that's not where Daniel started. What made Daniel distinct was that he served God. He was in tune with God. And he doesn't start on the boundaries. He didn't start with the boundaries to make his circle. He started at the center. And when you start at the center, becoming a Christian centered on Jesus Christ gives meaning to the circle. And it gives meaning to the boundaries that I'm going to have. It's not the boundaries that are important. It's what's in the center. It's that I'm serving Jesus Christ. Then you know what? The boundaries and the rules and the regulations that I keep in my life aren't the main focus. My focus is Jesus Christ. And those things become secondary, but they're important. G. Campbell Morgan said, "We shall never make the circumference of life true and beautiful until we have found this center. The first thing is that the man has a purpose in his heart, and that purpose to crown Jesus Christ. If you are purposing in your life, I am going to serve Jesus Christ regardless of the cost, the rules will take care of themselves. People will call you legalistic. That's okay. I just want to serve Christ. It's a relationship with Him that's important, not the rules. But the rules will come as a result of the relationship. I don't get the relationship because I keep rules. Jesus Christ is at the center of my life. Is He at the center of yours? Would you bow your heads? Father, I pray that we would keep Christ at the center of our lives. That serving You would be the most important thing. Lord, I pray for encouragement to believers here, young believers, to focus on who You are, to be more conformed to Your image. That we might be as Daniel, a man who had purpose, and yet he was polite, he was centered on You, and made a huge difference. All through the book of Daniel, we see the difference that he made. Lord, I pray that we would be that way. I pray that Christians right now would be in their hearts praying that they would stand with purpose, that we might make a difference, not only in this world, but right here in our own community, right here where You have placed us. Father, may we be found faithful as believers. I pray in Jesus' name.